Well, we're finding out more about the testimony heard by the 12-member grand jury and panel to consider whether to charge Officer Darren Wilson in the shooting death of Michael Brown. In 4 hours of testimony, Officer Wilson describes a fight that launches almost the moment he asks Brown and another man to stop walking in the middle of the street. And whereas early on, people who claimed to be eyewitnesses said Brown was holding up his hands and, in effect, giving up, Wilson and other eyewitnesses say the 18-year-old was charging at the officer. Peter Joy is a professor of law at Washington University in St. Louis. He's with us from the university studios. And Professor Joy, we want to get to the specifics of Officer Wilson's testimony. We heard a lot of it last night from the prosecutor. But first, what's your overall reaction to the grand jury's decision?
Well, it's their decision based after many days of hearing all the evidence. I've just been trying to go through the evidence myself. It's clear from their decision that they believe Officer Wilson's account and the accounts of those other witnesses that say that Michael Brown was not surrendering or incapacitated when Officer Wilson fired the fatal shots. So that's what their decision turns on.
Yeah. Well, let's tick through some of the testimony that surprised people. Early on, there were reports that Officer Wilson, for instance, did not know about a robbery of Cigarello's earlier in the day that Michael Brown was allegedly involved in. And then we have this new testimony. What does it say?
It says that when he initially stopped and told Michael Brown and his companion to get out of the middle of the street, he didn't associate them with a radio call he had received earlier about an alleged robbery that had taken place. So that is, I think, consistent with the original statement from the chief of police of Ferguson that he didn't stop them because of that. I think his statement, though, the police chief's statement originally went further, suggesting that Officer Wilson was unaware of the alleged robbery. But I looked at his testimony, the testimony of all of the other police who had questioned him because they testified before the grand jury, and I looked at the statement that he gave the day after Michael Brown was killed. In those statements, he makes reference to the robbery and indicating that after he had told them to get out of the middle of the street, and as he was backing up his cruiser, he saw the Cigarillos, and then he made that connection. I think at one point somebody said he put two and two together.
Right. He saw also the shoes and the hat that were described in the police reports. It seems that one of the key points in this incident was Michael Brown's decision to turn around and approach Wilson again after an initial confrontation with Wilson in his police car when a gun went off. And that seems to be key to so many people. There were so many witnesses who, and you can even see there were tapes that surfaced, YouTube tapes that surfaced of people watching the shootings, and they threw their arms up. I remember the truck driver who threw his arms up, indicating he has his arms up. That gentleman, you know, that young man that was just shot had his arms up. But now we have this testimony saying that, in fact, he was charging. Just take us a little deeper there. That's resonating for a lot of people.
Right. And I haven't gone through all of the transcript. There's several thousand pages worth. I know that last night Mr. McCullough, the head prosecutor, had indicated that some of the individuals who said initially that they saw Michael Brown with his hands up were repeating what other people had told them and hadn't seen it themselves. I do believe that there are some witnesses who stayed with that story and said that he was surrendering when the fatal shot was fired. But I know that Officer Wilson was consistent in his original statement, his statements to the other police officers, that Michael Brown was not surrendering when the fatal shots were fired.
Yeah. Some of the quotes from the testimonies, Wilson says, the police officer says, he was almost bulking up to run through the shots that he was firing. The officer was firing at him like it was making him mad that I'm shooting, and the face that he had was looking straight through me like I wasn't even there. I wasn't even anything in his way. At another point, he talks about wrestling with him and feeling like he was a 5-year-old with Hulk Hogan. These are words that would tell a grand jury that he felt in fear for his life.
That's absolutely right. I know at one point one of the prosecutors questioned Darren Wilson before the grand jury and said, well, did you think about just getting back in your car and waiting? And there, Officer Wilson said two things. One is he said, well, I was thinking, you know, it's my job to stay with him till support comes. And if I get in my car, what will happen to the next police officer who sees him on the other side of the apartment complex? And the second thing he said is, and we're not trained to retreat. That's what he told the grand jury, and I'm sure that that factored into their decision.
And what about those fatal shots? The Boston Globe asks in an editorial today, why did Officer Wilson fire 12 shots? Why would an officer trained to use the minimum amount of force to gain control of a situation fire 12 times at an unarmed suspect? But in some of the testimony, it sounds as if Wilson thought Michael Brown might have been armed.
Well, yeah, he keeps on referencing Michael Brown having one of his hands in his waistband, but he never at any point says, I thought he was armed, or at least I haven't seen that in my review. But I think on the main point that you raise about was it necessary for him to use that amount of force, I know he tells in his statements and before the grand jury why he didn't use mace. Because initially, when he was in the car, he was afraid that if he squirted the mace, that it would incapacitate him. Mm-hmm. And he also did not have a taser with him. And he said he didn't like using a taser. He didn't have one with him because it was too bulky. So that left him with the gun. So the other less deadly options that he had, you know, he didn't have one with him, and the other one he felt under the circumstances wasn't going to be effective. That's, I'm sure, going to be a subject of debate.
Professor Joy, Peter Joy, is professor of law at Washington University in St. Louis. As you said, Professor, 1,000 pages of testimony. This is going to be pulled apart for days to come. So thank you for starting with us. Thanks very much.
Okay, and thank you.